Alaska is once again surging into the national imagination. What will the wave be like this time around? Believe me, your guess is at least as good as ours. Maybe you've had a chance to watch the industry at work or be part of a motion picture or reality show crew. Let us know. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Our toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, statewide and toll-free. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. Alaska and the Dream Factory is the subject again on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Providence Imaging Center, with its newest center in Soldotna, offering CT scans, MRI, ultrasound, and digital X-ray to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
It's going to be kind of the opposite of the usual. I'm realizing that there's nobody on the panel who has any expertise in part of the subject being under discussion, which is reality television. None of us watch it. None of the panelists watch reality TV. We're gonna be expecting a lot out of you, the listener. 1-800-478-8255 is the number if you want to file it away. Well, my observation is that Alaska rises in the national imagination in cycles. For instance, the gold rush, of course. But then again, you come to the turn of the century and millionaire Edward Harriman brings a boatload of writers and scientists up on a tour of Alaska. They publicize Alaska to the rest of the nation. A few years later, we get the progressive era starting to make much of the control of mining in Alaska by J.P. Morgan and the Guggenheim family. That gave us the Alaska Railroad, among other things. The state was, of course, greatly reshaped by World War II, but most of the nation didn't hear much about what happened up in Alaska. Up in Alaska, however, the war dropped more legend makers on the state. We can all think of some of these people. And one of them was Richard Prenicke, who made influential home movies of his life in the wilderness at Lake Clark. These home movies were shown all across the country, and they caught fire in the imaginations of many who dreamed forever afterwards of doing the same. And many came up here and actually did it. So here's just my sketchy list of movies and media phenomena that have been coming out of Alaska. Eskimo with Ray Mala. The Ice Palace, Salmon Berries, White Fang, Runaway Train, with John Voight, who still is playing a role in reality TV in Alaska. He got hooked on a place. Northern Exposure on television. I mean, there's a lot of people that watch that show on TV and are convinced they know what Alaska is like because they watch Northern Exposure. On Deadly Ground, oh yes. The Deadliest Catch, Into the Wild, Ice Road Truckers, Chronic Town, Smoking Dope in a Motel in Fairbanks, and Getting Suicidal Thoughts, when it's not really as far below zero as they say in the script. Sarah Palin, Stemwinder speech on TV, candidacy, changes everybody's perception of Alaska, Sarah Palin's Alaska, all the other spin down from that. Big Miracle, On the Ice, The Frozen Ground, and then all kinds of reality TV. So it's an interesting evolution to contemplate, and I think we have to say that where we sit now is in the reality TV stage because the feature motion pictures have mostly come and gone. And so with me is somebody that doesn't like that very much, Ron Holmstrom, who is the Alaska rep for the Screen Actors Guild, which is now merged with the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists, and who played Robert Hansen's lawyer in The Frozen Ground. Ron, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. It's good. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
I've asked you to come here to... you're not going to be an expert on reality TV. In fact, you really don't care for it because, obviously, you're a union man. And reality TV is not a union thing, right?
Oh, it is absolutely not a union thing. You won't see a SAG-AFTRA actor on those programs.
Yeah. So, and maybe union, maybe in the crew some, maybe.
You maybe would find someone, and maybe an IA guy or a camera operator or something, but probably not.
So as somebody representing actors and then a professional actor yourself, what do you think of reality TV?
Well, how shall I put this? It sucks. No, actually, there's some of it, you know, I mean, some of it's pretty, you know, good. I have watched the ones with the Kilchers, you know, and I've seen maybe an episode and a half of that. I don't watch a lot of TV anyway, but that's, you know, that's kind of fun. But I don't know, it seems like anything that has Alaska in it has legs as a reality TV show. I mean, it seems like every other reality TV show has something to do with Alaska.
Crazy, isn't it?
I don't get it.
I don't either. Maybe our listeners do at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. If you call today, your chances of getting through are pretty good because we're only carried on a limited number of stations. A lot of public broadcasting across Alaska, the stations are running automated, unattended, and there's nobody to, like, turn the program on and off. So we're only on a limited number of stations. And so I thank you again, Ron Holmstrom, for coming in here. And we can be kind of loose about our conversation.
Well, I'm always happy to show up when there's no grown-ups in charge.
Exactly. So one thing I'd like to do is get into some, I guess we'll call them war stories. In other words, when you actually physically, like, brush up against the motion picture industry or the reality TV industry or the entertainment industry, whatever form you would like to talk about, what it's like, what you learn, strange things that happen. I mean, for instance, if you ever, which you didn't, I don't think, work with Robert Altman, you would come back with a story. Because he's that kind of movie director who the making of the movie is the exploration of the environment in which the movie is taking place. And the actors discover that they don't know when their microphones are on.
Well, he was very, Altman, I knew a lot of people who worked with him. I never was honored to work with him. But yeah, he was very big into improv. You know, you'd shoot a scene, from the way I understand it, you'd shoot it the way it was written, and sometimes, but then you just play with it, you know. And so, and that's, you know, that's really the meat for an actor too. I mean, you learn your scene by, you know, by rote, so you got it down, you know. And then, but it's always a pleasure when you get the last take and the director says, "Hey, do you want to have some fun with this?" Huh. You know, and of course you do. You know, you ask actors. You know, it's like saying, "Would you like to rewrite your dialogue that really suits you and makes you look better than you can possibly imagine?"
And sometimes he would even use it.
Sometimes you don't even use it, yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes he would use it.
Well, it depends. I did this perfectly.
Yeah, because my son, who's a producer, did a documentary on Altman. And he was shocked that all the people that were in the Altman movies, he figured he'd just get a few of them that wanted to come. They all came.
Oh, God, yeah.
They all wanted to talk about it. And he was like Elliot Gould, frozen up. You remember MASH. We're talking making MASH.
Yeah.
And he just froze up because he didn't. He said, "What do you mean you're not telling me what to say?
Oh,
you
no.
want me to make it up?
Oh, my God.
I can't do that.
Yeah, I don't do that. I'm an actor.
Where's
Give
my
me
lines?
Some lines." Yeah. Well, I had the pleasure of going to Robert Altman threw the best parties. And I had the pleasure of going to a couple of Altman's parties when I was still living in Hollywood. And I can imagine who your son had show up, because, I mean, the stories from
everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, God,
Lily
Tomlin.
Nobody said
Keith
no. They were going to have a party last an hour. You know, it went on all night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that must have been a hoot.
Well, then he had to write something, you know, around it, trying to incorporate. He had to leave out whole films, left out my favorites, you know, left out Brewster McCloud totally, like it never happened.
God, yeah. Okay. Write something for Elliot Gould, quick. That's funny. I think a real lesson I learned is I was on the set of this film called Maniac Cop with Bruce Campbell, who went on to become like a real cult figure with the Army of Darkness films and stuff. But anyway, they got to a point where the director of photography said, hey, you know, we need a scene to lock in to do the transition between what we just shot and where we're going next. And so the assistant director on the show, this guy Sanford Hampton, said, hey, well, Ron's over there. Ron Holmstrom, he's an actor. Why don't you have him and Bruce just make something up? So they put me with Bruce Campbell, and they said, just go away and make up a scene. To tell two actors to go write their own scene? We came back with this hilarious, we thought, half an hour of dialogue, right? And, God, a couple of days, a few days later, I ran into the DP in a restaurant somewhere in L.A., and he said, my God, he said, that was the funniest thing. You and Bruce were hilarious. So I got invited to the screening, and I went there, and it was about maybe 80 seconds of the scene that we, and he said, it was too funny, Ron. It was a monster movie, remember? You and Bruce kind of lost sight of that. So you have to be careful when somebody says, hey, take it away.
1-800-478-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about Tales of the Movie Business in Alaska, although that one wasn't in Alaska. And my son, he has been in touch with Johanna and me for years, asking for ideas for things that he can pitch to do some kind of shoot in Alaska. And we keep coming up with these things that we think are great, but they're not over the top enough for him. He has this sort of misanthropic view of human nature, and he's looking for, he wants some kind of over the top, you know, cliche situation, you know. For goodness sake, I mean, Alaskans are larger than life frequently, regardless, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
It doesn't seem, you know, that's why I was interested what you were saying about the Kilcher family being on reality TV, and it's actually not a bad show.
It's interesting, you know, to see see them working as they live out there. You know, it'd be interesting to maybe follow a theater company from the production of a new play right through to the opening night.
It would. Are you pitching that?
Apparently, I just did.
Okay. Let's go to Talkeetna, where Willie joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Willie. Glad you called.
Well, thank you. Hello to all, and Merry Christmas to all this morning.
Yeah.
Thanks, Willie. Same to you.
Yeah, so I was on cast on National Geographic's Ultimate Survival Alaska in the first season in 2012. And I'm actually in Wasilla at the moment, running some errands, and I'm not getting your radio station, but my wife called me and said, hey, you should call in. So here I am.
Ultimate Struggle Alaska. Is this still
Ultimate
going?
Ultimate Survival Alaska.
Ultimate Survival. Was that the one that Hagen Aaron stumbled upon someplace around Yakutat?
No.
Uh-huh. Okay.
No, we did 10 locations all the way across Alaska, kind of as presented as a single expedition, but not in the coastal areas up by Yakutat.
So, I have Ron Holmstrom with me. He's with the Screen Actors Guild, and he's like sort of deploring or bad-mouthing the reality TV industry because he says, there's not union and there's not, you know, they just sort of like put it together afterwards out of whatever they get. I'm just wondering what your perceptions were. I mean, you got work out of it, at least.
Oh yeah, I got work out of it, and I also got to see some of the most spectacular and most interesting places of Alaska on somebody else's nickel. That was all really good. It was everybody that was on that production were the real deal. They definitely knew their stuff. You know, there was no phony business, nothing contrived. Although I hear on season two they've been like contriving a few things. The thing that, two things that my takeaway from it. Number one, when I saw the finished product, even though it's more watchable than most reality TV, which is a pretty low bar,
yeah,
it was kind of surprising to me what the LA-based editors chose to use and not use. And so my first takeaway is when you live in LA, your view of reality is extremely different than ours in Alaska.
Right. Well, wouldn't it be great if we could actually do our own cuts of these things?
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be the ticket.
Yeah. And kind of the second takeaway was I think they kind of missed the boat. It ended up being a really expensive production for them because of error insert and extraction costs and whatnot.
Yeah.
But if they had filmed between the scenes, because we would typically have one day between legs while they were getting logistics sorted out, and we were required to camp out. We were not allowed underneath roofs pretty much on the whole production to keep it as real as possible. And some of these one-day things turned into two or three with flight delays and whatnot, and they were all in small bush villages, some of them native villages, some of them mixed. And we had the greatest bonfires on those evenings, and half of everybody in the village would show up, and we would get some ad-lib music going. One of my friends on the production, Marty, and his son, Matt Rainey, were excellent musicians, and they would always borrow musical instruments. And I have some of the best memories of sitting around all night long around a bonfire, sharing various types of booze and wonderful music. And I think they could have done a program just out of that. And so I think they missed the boat.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to beat Marty Rainey.
Yeah.
And so, I don't even know,
yeah,
Matt.
I've known Marty for 25 years, and he's definitely a unique, one-of-a-kind individual.
Right. Yeah, so, well, a lot of that you couldn't have shown on TV, though. I know that for a fact.
So none of those bonfire scenes made it onto the screen, huh?
No, they were keen to kind of stitch together the whole expedition aspect of it and not get sidetracked with anything else, which I can kind of understand. I mean, they told me afterwards that they had, for every minute that showed on TV, they had 600 minutes that didn't show. So I'm sure it was a huge editing work for everybody involved.
That's an absolutely astonishing ratio. For somebody that came up in the film industry as I did, that's an inconceivable ratio.
Oh, boy.
Well, I think the only thing that makes it possible is they use electronic media now instead of real film.
Oh yeah, totally.
which I saw this coming years ago, and I thought, oh boy, we're gonna miss film for more reasons than one.
Amen. Willie, thanks for telling us about that. That was great.
All right.
Thanks for taking time out of your
nice day.
Yeah,
happy
your
holidays,
busy
Willie.
Your busy Christmas Eve stuff. Yeah, doing your chores. We'll let you get back to them.
Okay. Bye bye.
All right. Thanks a lot. Go down to Fairbanks now, and David joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Have a seat. Have a cup of coffee. Tell us what's up.
I do have coffee. I think I called you guys a few years ago when you had this similar subject. I am a film major at UAF, so I've been trying to make a life in film and TV, and it's been kind of working out.
Oh, good.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, I got to work on that National Geographic BBC show, Life Below Zero, and I didn't get to do anything too important, but it was still fun, and it paid well, and it looked really good on my resume. So,
well, I'm a big fan of your film program up there, and your and the wonderful Maya that put it all together.
Oh yeah, the queen of film, I would call her up here.
here.
So do you have a screenplay yet?
I have a couple that I just had to write for class. They're nothing too polished, but, if I need to get a pitch together, I can do that now.
All right. Hey, fantastic. And meanwhile, you become sort of like go-to guy for a few things.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of my friends who are theater and musician types, end up asking me for a lot of help with that.
Uh-huh. Mostly for free, probably.
Yep. But, fortunately I like their art, so.
Yeah. Well, now, this is interesting because you bring up the A word, and that's the first time anybody said art in relation to this business, which is very interesting.
Really? Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing it at UAF is because the access to equipment and the things I get to do with it are just so much more than if I were going to, I don't want to say a real film school because we are, but a more traditional film school.
Yeah.
And here I can just check out a few cameras and, film my friends and edit it. And it's just so much easier to do that here than anywhere else.
You know, I will tell you that really counts. That type of freedom, especially at your stage of development, is actually critical. And it's one of the reasons that the UAA theater program has been so productive. Because, for one, they're one of the best schools you can go to learn sword fighting, stage sword fighting. I don't know if they do that anymore, but they had a great tradition of that when Michael Hood
was
there.
Michael Hood, yeah.
And the other thing is, hardly any theater program at any university in the United States allows students to direct. and you can direct there. It's the same thing. Yeah. You can make your own movie. It
encourages them to direct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really great.
And at UAF, I'm basically allowed to do whatever I want, which is pretty unheard of. So,
no, you just wait till you're an alumnus, and they'll really be coming to you then.
Yeah, boy, that's for sure. Yeah,
soon.
Yeah, wait till you've got an executive producer, and that all changes too. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. Uh huh. Sure, you do. How much?
Let me ask you this, David. Are you hopeful that we'll see feature film location returning to Alaska at some point?
Yeah, I'm hopefully going to work on a feature film next month. And so I feel it's just people, we have to keep that film incentive going, and people just have to get comfortable with the idea. I'm a little worried about Fairbanks because it's so much more expensive to get to than Anchorage.
Well, it is, yeah. And as we'll hear shortly, Juneau is actually a very preferable location for the industry right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's mainly because it's going the way of reality TV. And it's
closer.
Yeah, and David, we will keep seeing extremely low-budget films here. We're just not going to see the big features anymore.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
But, I don't know if you heard, David, but I know that Scott Walker would like to make a second film up here, and his producers are working their pitch.
Ooh, well, I'm going to be here, and I'll be ready to work on it. So,
I don't know if they want to go all the way up to Fairbanks, though.
Yeah, I've actually tried to find out about that film that's shooting up next month up there in Fairbanks, and I can't find out anything about it.
So you want to tell us more, David?
There was a presentation gave on it in one of my classes I took this semester, which was an awesome opportunity. And I heard it's going to be a horror film of some sort, maybe around polar bears.
I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, and that it sounds witty and funny, and they need rules, I've heard, for some local people. So it won't be entirely just people coming out from the outside.
Yeah.
Well, I've tried to find out if it's a SAG-AFTRA film, and I haven't been able to see that on the radar yet. So
I think the odds are pretty good it's not.
Yeah, it sounded like
it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not. So.
Okay, David. Well, great. Anything else you want to add?
No, just I'll be around, and hire me if you're working on a film.
All right, David. Thank you very much. And also from Fairbanks, let's talk to Kurt. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kurt.
Good morning.
Morning.
Back on reality TV.
Yeah.
We don't have a TV, so I haven't watched any of the shows. But I was often wondering, what do you think the Sarah Palin effect has been on it?
I can't tell. Yeah, we're the last people to be experts on that, and I guess you are too. You're just throwing the question out there, and we'll see what the listeners have to say, because we have no idea. None of us watch TV.
I will say that I was at the big convention for our merger of SAG and AFTRA, and about half the people that realized I was from Alaska asked me if I knew Sarah.
Sure, yeah, I get that all the time. I just don't think we were on the radar until she put us there, and then it took off.
Well, I think we go on and off the radar. I will say that. I mean, that's how I kind of opened the program, saying all the bunch of different times we've been on the radar, and this is the latest one. But it sure made a difference. I mean, I would go so far as to call it seismic, in terms of how people view Alaska. It would be very different now than it was before.
Absolutely.
I was in the States a couple years ago with a buddy of mine that was a trucker up here. And when folks found out that he was a ice road trucker, they went crazy over him. And again, they thought it was real.
Well, it is real.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Oh, thanks. That was beautiful. That was one of the best yes I ever heard.
Great take. That was a great take. Yeah, people ask me if I know any of the crabbers from television. Say, aren't those guys from Washington?
Mostly. They don't spend much time in Anchorage.
Yeah.
Okay, Kurt. Well, we put it out there. We'll see what people have to say at 1-800-478-8255, because I just don't know.
Oh, well, thank you. You have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, Kurt, up in Fairbanks. I think we can assume the program is on the air in Fairbanks.
I guess.
As well as Talkeetna. And that puts it on also all over all over interior Alaska, all the way up to Bettles. We're on the air in Bettles right now.
Holy cats.
Yeah, think of that. Our email address, by the way, is talk@alaskapublic.org. I almost forgot. Our subject is Tales of the Movie Business and Reality TV Business in Alaska, and how is it changing, and how is the national perception of Alaska changing? And I think Kurt really, put his finger on an important force in this that we're not really good at diagnosing, is the pre and post Sarah Palin perception of Alaska, and it's an interesting area to investigate.
Yeah, it depends on what people are seeing on TV, because I remember I was working in Hollywood when Northern Exposure was on. And all of the erroneous stuff there, I mean, I'd get such a kick out of it because I'd be on the phone to my sister, my brother, my dad, my mom.
They'd come up every season. They would come up, go to the Alaskan, and they would collect all this Alaska stuff to take down there where they were going to actually shoot the thing.
And never do any research.
Well, but they'd bring all the stuff back.
Well, as it happens, the last season of that show, I had just come to Alaska, and I was doing a show at Cyrano's based on the Iditarod called Salute to the Iditarod, singing, dancing sled dogs. And I came up with this concept for an episode of Northern Exposure. I happened to know somebody that knew Carsey, the producer. So I pitched it to him, and they said, well, you know, Ron, our show's not really about Alaska.
No. It was about people.
It was character-driven.
Yeah.
Because apparently it was originally written as about a resort in Florida.
Right.
Yeah, so there we are.
Well, yeah, and the whole business with the radio station, that's kind of your separate riff in there.
Yeah, which, interestingly enough, there's a film being shopped right now that we may shoot up here this in February that's going to star John Corbett, who was the DJ on that radio station in Northern Exposure.
So cool. Well, I'm thinking right now about Percy Adlon and Salmon Berries. I don't know if you've seen Salmon Berries. It goes back a few years now, but it's hard for me to imagine because for me it was just yesterday. But he had a Beyond Altman way of exploring the environment where he was going to shoot, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, true.
And you know, so he had Katie Lang up there to play the lead role, but he also has this German woman that he always works with as a major character. And then he incorporated the locals. And it's like the process of writing Salmon Berries entirely took place based on the observation of the environment and the folkways of the people there. I thought this is exploratory filmmaking. It comes out as a feature film, but at the same time, wow, wouldn't it be great if others did this type of exploration where they didn't come in with all these notions of looking for the most over-the-top exaggerated character they can find to fit some cliche that's already had in their heads?
Well, that was pretty organic filmmaking, because I happened to have a dear friend who was the second AD on that film, and I'd just come to Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And so when she flew through, she stopped and talked to me about it. And it sounded like one of the things that I kind of cautioned her about is she said, yeah, Percy wants to shoot in a real blizzard. I said, no.
You can't do that. No. You can't get a microphone into it.
I said, no. I said, what you ought to do is talk him to flying up a couple of Ritter fans and just pretend it's a blizzard, because otherwise somebody will probably be in serious trouble at some point.
It's almost impossible to record wind.
Oh, God.
I mean, you have to find a shelter in its place and monitor. It's really tough. And then it's great if you have one of them big old blimps with the old dead cat going over it.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
They love those things on a fishpole.
The blimp.
So you can move it around. We got one. I got one at home.
Yeah. Yeah, they're neat. Yeah. In network television down in L.A., they've got them on like carts, you know, electric carts you drive around.
A load of blimps.
Yeah.
Let's go to Caribou Creek. And Phil joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Phil.
Howdy, guys.
Howdy.
Don't know if Ron remembers you or not. Phil Pierce.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Yeah, doing pretty good. I've been making documentary films in Alaska for about the last 30 years. Stuff I do is like the first documentary of riding a motorcycle to the Arctic Ocean.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Canada's Northwest Territory, the village of Inuvik on the delta of the Mackenzie River where it flows into the Arctic Ocean.
Wow. Phil, we're honored to have you on the program.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Phil.
Documentary of riding a motorcycle from the States to Alaska, and also thing called Wings to Alaska, which was the first documentary of flying a light plane, a private plane, from the States to Alaska. First documentary of ocean kayaking, sea kayaking in Alaska. It's what I do. And I was going to make some observation about these reality shows. You got stuff like the Deadliest Catch, and they're filming that stuff live right there as the guys are doing it, from what I can determine. And so I could call that a reality show. But when they've got this stuff like Alaska Survival, and they're surrounded by crews and cameras, et cetera, and they're, you know, undoubtedly have to be hewing to some kind of, you know, tight safety routines. I don't see that so much as reality. How about you guys?
Oh, yeah. I think that's almost beyond question. I mean, I think even the viewers know it's a willing suspension of disbelief many times.
Well, that's why I say, I mean, to title that reality just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's just a moniker, and I can see why that would really bother a real documentarian like you.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, think of it as real stuff anyway, but
yeah.
The fact is, the film, you know, that I've seen come out of Alaska, you were talking about salmon berries.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is... to use a word that was used here earlier, is real art. And like Dick Pronicky's film, I met Pronicky once, is, you know, his 16mm stuff. I mean, he was shooting that while he was doing it, and he was the only one there.
Those are incredible.
What were those, Phil?
Pardon me?
Oh, they're, you have to see them. We've actually shown them on public TV, and that's how I often get to see them and talk to the historian of the park there. But, yeah, He documented his building of this really skookum cabin.
Yeah.
He would set the camera up and act out all the stuff he did. And it was right out there in the middle of nowhere, Lake Clark.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
You know, that's real.
Great light.
Now, I did a similar kind of thing. I made a documentary called The Last American Homesteaders. There was a group of us in the early 60s that went out to the Nabesna Valley and went homesteading. And one of the couples actually had a couple of kids, a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And they brought along a 8mm movie camera and documented us building the cabins and building the outhouses and, you know, the whole nine yards. And then I came back in the 90s and shot a bunch of footage, some just, you know, location stuff, other recreation. I showed, like, myself demonstrating how to shape a log on a, you know, building a cabin. that's been shown in a number of film festivals around the U.S. It was shown at the Anchorage Film Festival first. So mine was different from Kronicki's in that it was a whole group of us.
Right. But that's valuable documentation there, because that was the end of the homesteading right there.
Well, the reason I call it The Last American Homesteaders is because my great-grandparents homesteaded in the Dakotas in the 1880s.
Uh-huh.
Grandmother homesteaded in Minnesota in the 1900s, and I homesteaded in Alaska almost 100 years later.
Wow.
And just after we homesteaded out there in the Nabesna, Congress rescinded the Homestead Act,
right.
The federal act that all of my relatives had homesteaded under. So I'm third-generation federal homesteader.
Phil, once again, we are honored to have been called by you.
I'm glad to get a chance to chat, and I'm hoping to see once this reality stuff kind of runs its course. I'm hoping maybe it'll encourage, you know, documentary filmmakers to get out. And I mean, there's still all kinds of subjects in this country that really need to be recorded and you know, for history. And I'm hoping that's what'll happen, because I'm 75 years old, but I'm still out there doing it. But, you know, it'll only be so long.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Yeah, Phil, thanks again. Thanks for your call.
Hey, sure good to hear from you, Phil.
You bet. Take care, Ron.
Uh-huh, you too, buddy.
Next thing you know, Bill Bacon's going to be calling us. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about how the entertainment industry, the motion picture industry, the reality TV business is bumping up against Alaska and how it changes. And it does change, and it has changed just in the last few years. Joining us from our member station, KTOO in Juneau, is reporter Lisa Fu. Lisa, welcome to Talk of Alaska. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Steve.
Hi. It's probably a pretty quiet Christmas Eve there at KTOO.
Quite a few people at work, so we're still staying busy here.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear it. You know, you have been filing a series of stories, really, that are just basically local news about all the different reality TV stuff that's happening in Juneau, and it must be odd for you because there's all this confidentiality, right? Do you have to sort of do a little tap dance in order to do anything?
The last two filmings that I was reporting on, this recent one is a new reality show, so they're just filming the pilot. And the people that I spoke to beforehand had not signed confidentiality agreements, or non-disclosure agreements, but they still did not want to be recorded or quoted.
What do you know?
So, yeah, I talked to someone at a local travel tourism thing here, and I don't want to give it away. And she told me all the details of where they were going to be and who was here, but she's like, let me check with the producer. And then when she did, she's like, I don't feel comfortable revealing her name or any of the information. So I basically just had to track them down at one of the places that they were filming. So we just got a tip from a friend, and we went down to the Alaskan Hotel, and I just caught them there. So interviewed the producer and tried to watch some of the filming, but it took too long, so I ended up leaving. But just talked to folks there and got more of the story.
Well, and we were talking earlier with somebody was saying the ratio shoot to screen ratio is absolutely huge on some of these shows. In other words, they're constantly rolling, and then what they end up using is just a tiny, tiny scrap of that. So you could probably see that. I mean, if like you were saying, generally speaking, when you shoot a motion picture, you plan the lighting, you plan everything to limit the amount of time that you're going to be exposing your film. Well, that's the way it used to be. It's not like that anymore. They're rolling all the time. I mean, you say, well, it took so long, I finally went home.
Well, in the days of film, I mean, not only was film expensive, but processing was expensive. And your time on the set, I mean, the director and the first AD would come to the set with a shot sheet.
Yeah.
You'd know we're going to shoot this, and we're going to go around here, get the reverse, and we're going to get a two shot, then we're going to go, you'd start with a master and then work your way out of the room, right?
I had to learn to go around with a damn light meter and meter everything before we started.
Of course, yeah. Every time you turn the camera around, you'd run the meter on it. So, but what happened now, and the first time I heard this back in the 80s is somebody said, oh, no, just keep rolling, tape's cheap. I thought, we're doomed. We're going to be doing 20-hour days because these bozos don't have to worry about costs.
And now it's non-union.
Yeah.
So do you have any indication, Lisa, Ron Holmstrom with us is a Screen Actors Guild rep, and he's concerned that all this reality TV hardly has any union involvement. Did you kind of see that? Would you know even?
Well, so the pilot that they just filmed here, they had a crew of 15 around. Half of them were from the production company Intuitive Entertainment, which was from out of L.A., and then I think half of them were local Juno folks. I talked to one of the crew members who was the friend of the star of the show of that episode. So I guess maybe she had suggested that her friend work on the crew and he was on the crew. So I'm not, I doubt that there was union representation or they were hiring union folks there.
So they finished up the great race ended there, right?
Yes, and that one I did not cover. I was not able to track that down or report on that one. All I did hear was a lot of complaints about from locals saying that they were blocking some trailheads, you know, that they couldn't just access them.
It's so interesting to hear this from a local news point of view. And then the Hotel Impossible. That one struck fear into my heart until I realized, no, they're actually not going to change the bar.
Well, that's what the owner, Betty Adams, had told me. She probably wasn't supposed to reveal what was going to happen on the show, but she said, you know, she said they will not be touching the bar. It will not change. And I believe that maybe, you know, while the physical aspects of the bar didn't change, I believe there were internal changes made regarding management and whatnot. So I think that does change the feeling of the bar, you know, the crowd, the scene.
Yeah. Has that run yet?
No, that's going to air later in January. That opens their fourth season.
Yeah. So you've had the three that I can think of. And then, of course, you had Alton Jones. You had basically asked me, brought up Food Channel people, right?
Well, yeah. So August of 2012, Top Chef filmed in June. I believe they were here for a week. And Matt Miller from KTOO did most of the reporting for that. And what was interesting about that particular shoot was that the state and ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, contributed about $250,000 to that shoot.
Right.
So, you know, and they brought a lot of people here. I think the crew was 125 people, maybe a dozen of them were locals, and everybody had to sign non-disclosure agreements, is my understanding.
Ron, you going to say something now?
Yeah, just the fact that they're not using union people, and especially my actors, is not my only kick. The thing is when we did have the big feature films coming up here, it would employ hundreds of Alaskans from in various roles, some of them for months at a time. Now these shows are coming up here to shoot, and it's almost all of them. We're lucky if there's like five Alaskans employed. And
solidarity forever.
Yeah, solidarity, brother.
Well, it seemed like it's for Top Chef and these other ones, they're using the local hotels. They're using catering service from the local restaurants. Hotel Impossible employed, I believe, two contracting companies. So while there, you know, there might not be actors involved, it seems like they are bringing money into Juneau, at least into the communities.
Oh yeah, I don't think there's any question of that. And when they need it, they need it, and they will pay what the, you know, they will try and get a good deal. But I mean, they just need to have whatever they need to have.
Well, when it becomes an emergency, you spend whatever you have to do to get your shots for the day.
Yeah.
But my main point is that. We were at a point where we were employing hundreds of Alaskans, and now we're down to employing just a few. And that's not just actors I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. Any other ones that you've sniffed out or going on there in Juneau? It seems like just a hotbed of reality TV shows.
I don't know of any ones that will be coming on, but if they are here, I'll try to track them down.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for taking time out of what turns out to be a somewhat busy day down there at KTOO.
Take care, Lisa.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, Ron, too. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
See you now.
Let's go down to Sitka, and Rich joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rich.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Oh, just grand. Nothing I love better than sitting back and telling old war stories.
Well, you know, I lived abroad for 20 years, and it was really interesting because I tell people I was from Alaska, and they would have their different perceptions. When I first went there, it was all about Jack London, Call of the Wild. You know, Jack London, great deal. I'd read Jack London. I could respond to that. Then it was Northern Exposure, and I had seen Northern Exposure, so I could respond to that. And that was fine. And then people asked me if I visited the Magic Bus.
Oh, boy.
What in the devil is the Magic Bus? And people kept asking about that and had not a clue of what they were talking about.
We almost had
the book, and I haven't seen the movie.
The guy that built the mock-up magic bus was almost on the show today. He just unfortunately had surgery on Friday, and he's not well enough to come on the show. But Duke Russell was going to be on today to talk about his experience with Sean Penn in that movie.
Boy, could he have answered your questions for you?
Yeah, but
here I am abroad. I'm supposed to be the Alaskan who knows about the state, and I haven't got a clue about what the magic bus is.
Right.
You know, did Ken Kesey come to Alaska?
Yeah, airlifted his bus up here.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you bring up Jack London, because I experienced that in 1989 when we first started getting through the Iron Curtain, Rich. And going over to the Soviet Far East, this was a huge part of their perception, because Jack London was like worshipped in the communist countries because of his political leanings.
Oh right, yeah, socialist.
Yeah.
And when I went to Albania, Jack London is the only American author, or one of the few American authors, that people had read. And so
right,
you know, that was their perception. And then after the magic bus, it got stranger with Sarah Palin.
Yeah,
I don't know which is stranger, the magic bus or Sarah. And then finally, it got to The Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers. And now, interestingly, the Iditarod.
Wow! Oh, that's good. And not gold mining. I thought gold mining was big right now, but maybe not.
No, and what was really interesting is I was on the street of Belgrade, and I saw someone with a pickup truck with an Iditarod bumper sticker.
That's terrific.
Yeah, I heard about the Iditarod. I just wanted to have this bumper sticker on my car. And later I found that there's actually a Serb who was part of Martin Boozer's team, and he had run a second team.
He did. He ran a puppy team. Yeah, he ran a puppy team. You know, here's something that's it's funny and tragic, is there's a script afoot now, and there's a deal being made to do the story of the serum run to Nome, the race to save Nome.
We do have the documentary.
Yeah, and
this
is quite good. But this is a feature film.
Yeah.
And the people attached to it have been Kurt Russell and Hilary Swank. And so my agent's trying to get me a role in it, because I can mush puppies. And and the thing
that's
is...
Good. That counts.
Well, it does count. You know, if you're going to hire an actor, you know, then you, at least you don't have to send him to dog study.
Somebody's
going to
be bit by a dog trying to shoot.
Not that I don't get bit by dogs, but but the thing is they're going to shoot it probably in Iceland. Because
Iceland?
They were looking at Calgary, but now Iceland looks like the likely spot to shoot our most famous adventure story.
Holy cow. We know Balto is also well known, because there's a kid's book that's been translated in Serbian about Balto.
Well, this time it'll be the story of Togo, darn it.
Rich, it's
good.
Thanks so much for your call. That is great.
Take care.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rich.
We want to take a break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line is ready to help you succeed in your decision to quit tobacco. Take advantage of proven successful free resources. Trained quit coaches will provide support services to help you quit for good with confidential counseling. There's free nicotine replacement therapy and a tailored quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the ever-changing perception of Alaska as viewed through the media and the entertainment industry. And from Anchorage, from Kodiak, Sam joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sam. Good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I worked on this Alaska Women Looking for Love show that was running on TLC.
I see. And what was your perception?
Honestly, pretty positive. I had a lot of fun working on it. I don't normally do this sort of stuff. I was kind of just a lowly PA. I was sort of the run and fetch it guy, just driving people around and holding stuff and putting out fires. But normally it was kind of a look into an industry that I'd always kind of been interested in and hadn't really had an opportunity to do much with.
Did you get the perception that we're hearing from other people who bumped up against the industry that these people really, union or not, do seem to really know what they're doing?
Oh, yeah, and the whole union versus, I mean, It sounds like this whole crew union thing is a little bit of a complicated quagmire that I don't fully pick up on, but it seemed like most of the people up here, it was a non-union show, but it seemed like most of the actual crew members were union members in whatever states they'd come from. It's just a show may or may not be union, but that doesn't necessarily control whether the individual crew members belong to a union.
Right, yeah. And yeah, I know that. And yeah. I'm sure that Ron Holmstrom knows that, too. his union, Screen Actors, is merged with AFTER, which is for the radio and television artists. So, and that branches over to some of the technical people, too. So he's got a little bit of an interest in all this. But, yeah, so tell me the way that the people who are actually getting the screen time, how are they treated? Do they get like dressing rooms and stuff like that, or how does that work?
It was sort of interesting to watch the whole sort of diva complex start to take over a little bit. They definitely started off a little bit more grounded than they ended up.
Really?
But they were mostly all real sweet girls though, so it was a pretty positive experience working with them too.
And then the deal is, I mean, Kodiak. Were you in Kodiak or elsewhere as well?
I just was here in Kodiak. I was the local Kodiak guy they picked up when they were filming here, and I went to Anchorage with them as well when they were doing some scenes in Anchorage. But I didn't go down to Miami for that portion of the show that was filmed in Florida. Uh-huh. Sort of interesting. Somebody was talking earlier about how much is filmed and then not used. I mean, they were up here in Alaska for a couple months. I think we filmed up here for 8 or 9 weeks, and then they went away to Miami and then came back and filmed some more up here. And I haven't watched very much of the show. I think I only saw the first couple episodes, but it seemed like the first episode was set in Alaska, then they got out of there pretty quick. So 8 weeks of filming in Alaska turned out to be one episode. So,
well, but the idea was they were coming to Alaska looking for men, right?
Well, that's that they're Alaskan women that started here.
Oh,
and
I see.
Actually ended up going to Miami to look for boyfriends.
It went the other way around.
Yeah, sort of a not the most intuitive take on that idea, but
no, the goods are odd.
people mentioned that a few times.
Too. I'm sure they did. Yeah,
but,
I hesitated.
No, it was real fun, and honestly, they meshed pretty well with the community too. I mean, everybody that was up here was really respectful, really really dug Alaska and what it was about. Thought it was beautiful, and one thing I was going to mention is I actually ended up sort of impressing one of the camera girls that was up here working on the show, and I convinced her to move from Florida up here, and she's living with me up here in Alaska now.
Oh, wow.
This whole talk about whether we're employing Alaskans or out-of-state people, it's just kind of an interesting spin on it, is that, you know, Alaskans are sometimes made and not born a lot of time, and people that may not start off as an Alaskan when they first take the job might become an Alaskan due to positive working experiences with the filming up here, and you know, maybe get an influx of people that know something about the industry coming up here.
I'm just digging the love story.
Yeah, the love story is great.
Yeah, the behind-the-scenes love story was maybe a little bit more captivating than some of the stuff happening.
Well, they should have turned the camera around on you, Sam.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's just beautiful. Yeah, I think another thing that happens is as these people are doing location stuff in Alaska, then they know something about Alaska.
Right.
That doesn't disappear. I mean, they go off to be on other crews and so forth. So as time goes on, the whole industry is kind of learning Alaska.
Right. And some of these people are authors and artists, you know, in their own respect. And, you know, when they come up here and see what a beautiful canvas we have to work with, it can sometimes, I think, encourage more and better productions to be done down the road. So
yeah, I think that they don't undersell the scenic value and the light. We just have just fabulously beneficial light here for shooting. But of course, you also have everything's really expensive. I mean, that when my son was trying to figure out what to pitch in Alaska, it was always a question. Well, okay, how many miles, and you know, what's it going to cost to get there, and do I need a helicopter, and you know, on and on.
Yeah, and you can drive to Canada.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. And these, I mean, the crew, when they were up here, they were definitely dropping quite a bit of cash into the local economy. You're sort of talking about those emergency purchases earlier, and it was sort of remarkable to see the stuff that they wouldn't bring with them and then would go out and buy a brand new tent for one scene and then be done with that tent, leave it behind. So
that's true, Sam. There's a lot of stuff that that doesn't get into the radar about what a film's crew does spend in, you know, just out of pocket.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember we used to love commercial shoots because if you could get a job at commercial shoot, I mean, they just leave all that stuff behind.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. When I was a kid, when I was a young man in Hollywood, working for Farmer John's doing their stage managing for the TV commercials, I was a starving actor, right? Do you know how much, how many boxes of meat they left behind for me and the crew?
I'm loving it. That's a great story right there, Ron.
Yeah, Vin Scully. Thank you, Vin Scully, the voice of the Dodgers, for making that happen for us.
Yeah, I got a few sets of snowshoes and a couple of tents out of the affair, so I'm not complaining.
Oh, no, it's beautiful. Golden, man. It's
well,
golden.
Not to mention a crew member. It's become an Alaska.
Yeah, yeah, not to mention a girlfriend, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Sam, thanks for the call.
Thanks, yeah, no Sam. Problem.
Let's go down to Anchorage. And Cynthia, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Cynthia.
Hi, thanks a lot for having me.
Hi, what's tinkling there?
Well, I have a bit of a tangent to the...
There's some kind of... It's not breaking glass. It's
sleigh bells. It's reindeer.
Yeah,
Cynthia's
sleigh bells.
Reindeer.
That's it.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine, but I'm wondering what's tinkling in the background behind you.
Oh, I have no idea. I thought you were... I thought that was a clever way of asking what I was calling for.
No, not at all.
It is reindeer.
Here, I'll change locations here. And
no, you're fine. No. You're fine. Just go ahead. We're running out of time, so.
Yeah, and I have I don't have a continuation of the discussion of crewing and you know who's hired on reality shows about Alaska, but I did have a quick plug for a homemade reality show about Alaska from 1999 to 2001. I coordinated a project run by a whole network of Alaska volunteers and funded by the American Friends Service Committee. It was started up by Alaska Quakers to hear about Alaskans on their lives and experiences around the issue of subsistence. So stories and experiences about hunting and fishing.
So what's the title?
It's called Alaskans, Listening to Alaskans About Subsistence. That was the project. And there's a whole series of shows that we put together from what we heard that are pretty cool. And the collection of shows is called Common Ground. The university libraries have copies, public libraries have copies, and folks can get hold of copies through the Alaska Humanities Forum.
Cynthia, that thanks a lot for telling us about that. That is great.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
I sure hope that it's gotten some airtime. A lot of folks have seen it already, and we've heard back from people. And I just, you know, heard this show was on and thought it was a good chance to let people know about it because it's a pretty neat resource.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you getting that plug in. I want to thank you very much for your call from Anchorage.
I'm going to look for
thanks,
that.
Thanks so much for having the conversation and for letting me join it.
Yeah, thank you for all the callers that came through with stories about their encounters with the industry, which turn out to be abundant. And Ron Holmstrom, thanks again for coming back and being with us again. Maybe we'll do it again sometime.
My pleasure, Steve.
Yeah, and best of luck in the SAG-AFTRA. And we didn't even talk about the Mala thing. We got to do the Ray Mala story yet.
I'm happy to come back all and right. Talk about Ray. I'll bring Lael and Ted with me.
Fantastic. Thanks, Dave Waldron, Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by Providence Imaging Center, with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.